Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of NatureNow at kptz.org.
Hi, this is Nan Evans, and I'm your host for this week's Nature Now program. And I am pleased to say I'm actually down near Valley View, which is the land trust preserve just at the feet of Chimicum Ridge. And I'm here with two familiar people, Eric Kingfisher and Jen Kingfisher. Eric, of course, has been on the show in the past talking about all sorts of natural history, land conservation, land protection, all sorts of good things. And some of you listeners may know Jen through her work with the Jefferson Community Fund. Eric and Jen have spent the last 2 years or so living down here, just sort of in the midst of this wonderful, beautiful valley and at the foot of Chimicum Ridge. So I guess maybe first we ought to talk about what got you here. Because I knew you when you lived in town. Mm-hmm. So what brought you and your family here?
So I work as a stewardship director at Jefferson Land Trust. And Jefferson Land Trust has been endeavoring to establish a community forest down at the Chimicum Ridge area. This landscape feature between Center Valley and Beaver Valley, we are calling Chimicum Ridge. And back in 2010, the Land Trust identified this area through a big community strategic conservation planning effort as an area that would be really suitable for this idea of establishing a community forest, and it was threatened with subdivision and development. So we pursued some sort of protection and acquisition strategies way back in 2010, and we are at 2023 and we're getting close to finalizing that process of acquisition. In the process, the Land Trust acquired 65 acres along Center Road that is sort of like this gateway forest to the upper pieces of that big landscape feature. And
that's what we call Valley
View,
right?
That's what we call Valley View. So the Valley View Forest is 65 acres. It's sort of like this first step, this first acquisition in the broader community forest acquisition strategy. And we call it Valley View, and there's a parking area already established with a few trails. We've recently built a little pavilion down there as well. And then on the southern end of that property, there's a house. It was built by the Shorts family, Al Short and his wife Michelle, back in their early 80s. And then family trust that owned the property wanted to sell the property, and the Land Trust was able miraculously to pull all the things together that needed to acquire the property. And Michelle left with her family, and we needed somebody here for just a short period of time before we transitioned the property to functioning more as a full community forest. And the house needed a little bit of work and needed some attention.
Seems like you were the eyes on the ground for the Land Trust for this big piece of property. Is that one way of thinking about it?
Yeah, that's one way of thinking of it. I mean, the long story short is we needed somebody to be taking care of this place for a couple of years. It was kind of the best case scenario for the Land Trust for me to move down here with my family and be just caretakers of this space and get it ready to be a long-term resident and function for the community forest. And our preserve team, our stewardship team, continues to do some of the stewardship work on the main public access areas down there, but we also monitor that regularly as caretakers as well.
So what was it like when you and your family first decided to move down here?
You know, when you relocate any family with school-age children, and there's bound to be some sort of upset. It worked out pretty well for us in that, you know, you move houses, you have to get rid of a few things. That was quite lovely. Listeners may have experienced having a new house as a child and picking a bedroom and getting, it's sort of exciting. So I think the family was excited. And in all sorts of other ways, our life was the same. Mm-hmm. You know, we still have the same things that happen to us during the day, just coming home to a different house. That's kind of a really unique house. Mm-hmm. So that's been really cool.
And did your kids like coming into the forest?
Not as much as we really wanted them to.
They're way more comfortable in the forest now than they used to be.
Yeah. But that's important.
And they're still a little scared about it. But, I mean, they will go up to the logging roads on their own and come back on their own, which is new, and our kids are 16 and 9.
Yeah.
They are into the exploratory stage.
Enough, yeah. I mean, yeah. We have to kind of nudge them, but they feel comfortable enough.
But I think that's an important bit, is that they're comfortable enough. They know their way up through to the ridge property and around, and they know how to get back down, and they're comfortable enough to go on their own in those spaces, which is important for us.
Yeah, just the other day they went and picked a bunch of berries and made a cobbler.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. So, Eric, you're an amazing naturalist. What is it about this space that most struck you by living in it?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I was thinking about that on as we were thinking about this time together. And let me describe the place for the audience here. There's a house here, and there's several outbuildings as well. And otherwise, it's surrounded by trees. There's a grassy yard area that's probably a quarter acre, maybe a half an acre altogether with the infrastructure. And otherwise, it's surrounded by trees. And the trees are, you know, in that 60 to 70-ish year old age class. Mm-hmm. There's a variety of different kinds of trees.
Yeah, I see a real mixed forest when I look out.
Yeah, some of these trees are, you know, probably down closer to more like 40 years old. And then others are more in that 60, 70, 80 year old age class. Has been managed by the Shorts family for over 50 years. And the forest type is mostly red cedar and Douglas fir.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have several big leaf maple. You have some red alders throughout the stand. And some areas are much more dense than other areas. And so when I first came out here to start working on the house, can do some painting and some plumbing and some cleaning, I was out here several evenings after a full work day coming down here and getting things done. And I would be kind of tired at the end of that, and I'd sit out on the porch and rest. And I remember sitting there and thinking, oh, this is a lot like where I grew up. Mm. This is a very similar forest type than where I grew up. And I grew up down in between Woodinville and Duval, which is northeast of Seattle, in a forest. And we just had forest all around us. And I realized, oh, this is a really similar forest type and age. And it didn't even occur to me until I had been here for, you know, days and days that that was the case. So that's what struck me, was how familiar, I guess, it was to me and growing up in a place a lot like this.
Were there things in the natural world that you didn't expect that you see here?
You know what I didn't see but heard was the dawn chorus dawn chorus. Waking up in town is one dawn chorus, and the dawn chorus I hear here is a different suite of birdsong. didn't understand how different that could be.
So what, in terms of species, what's making the difference?
In the spring, you know, the Hutton's vireos start out really early, and then I don't know if I've ever seen so many western tanagers in one place. This place is full of western tanagers. It's really cool.
I think I've seen at most two in town.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of days I would work from home here, and I'd be up at a window upstairs and on my computer on calls and looking out the window, and I'd see like four or five western tanagers jumping around in the different red cedars out on the edge of this cleared area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's varied thrush. There's certainly lots of American robins still as well.
I love the varied thrush. Yeah. And I don't hear mourning dove, which I would hear
in town. Sure.
But yeah, well, you'd also hear Eurasian collared doves in town, and you don't hear them at all out here. Eurasian collared doves is a relatively new, non-native, invasive bird. And, you know, out here we don't have things like starling or house sparrows or anything like that, these otherwise invasive or non-native birds. Out here it's pretty exclusively native birds, which that struck me as well. I guess you would expect that, but it was very noticeable right away for me, and I really, really love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, you mentioned the varied thrush. I mean, again, I have seen at most a small handful in my years in town, and they're such beautiful and fascinating birds.
Yeah, definitely. You see them sometimes down like Cappy's Woods or Quipper Wildlife Corridor area, but not very often.
Yeah, and that we live sort of on the edge of that. But
Yeah.
And it's exciting to me to think about this still has a mostly native bird population.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another bird observations that I think are interesting out here is the turkey vultures fly over this particular spot in abundance. In the spring, you can come out here and look up, and you will likely see some turkey vultures catching a thermal right around here or just gliding over for seems like weeks and weeks and weeks. It's just right in here. They seem to pass over. I think that's really fun.
Is that what they're doing on the on their way north? Because I know there are spots on the peninsula here where they do kind of accumulate before they go across the strait.
Right, so like over Fort Worden, there's a really great viewing space there. Other hawks do that at Fort Worden. And
so you think that's the sort of...
I don't know.
In the build-up to that?
I think there must be a little bit of a lift off of the valley or something. There must be some sort of air movement or something, I presume, because it just seems that there's so many that come right past here or just seem to circle right around here. It's fun.
So can you really notice the spring and fall migrations down here?
Yeah, it's very quiet in the fall. You know, we don't have a lot of bird song in the fall typically, but in the spring there's a lot of daily change that happens. And the different sequence of birds coming through that come through for just a little bit. I have to remember every year, what is that? I can't remember. What is that?
Yeah.
And I have to sit there and go find it, or, you know, now we can use those apps to find it.
Except for the varied thrush. Like, I can always recognize the varied thrush,
definitely.
So what about other kinds of critters, mammals or insects or reptiles, or what do you see out here?
Yeah, well, we put up some trail cams and some just in the forest around here just to see what's going on, and we see everything, you know, everything you could imagine. The whole spectrum of large mammals has been documented on this property in Chimicum Ridge. So everything from Roosevelt elk to black bear to mountain lion to bobcat to the deer.
Jen's shaking her hand going,
Well, and sometimes we're seeing them on the trail cam on our little trail. Sometimes we're seeing sign of those animals coming through, and which is especially fun to notice when I've been able to know the place so well, so these minute changes are more visible to me than they might otherwise be, because it's something, you know, I'm going up there every day almost now when it's light at night, so you get to see these minute changes in the landscape. And there's this elk sign on our little trail that I wouldn't notice now because it's sort of worn into the wood a little bit, but when it first came, it was so obvious because I know this little spot so well.
It's a marvelous thing about living and knowing a spot.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things, is knowing the spot and being so intimate with the ridge. I'm going up there right now when it's light pretty much 5 days a week. It's my favorite thing in the world. I get to know all the little minutia. And right now, my most exciting thing is watching the berries ripen up on the ridge. And it's been really fun. I took a friend up yesterday, and I think we ate seven different kinds of berries.
Yeah.
One Himalayan, so one non-native. Right. But and I also included salal berries, which I don't tend to like because they're so mealy.
Mm. Okay, so the native raspberry, salal.
Red huckleberry.
Okay.
Black cap raspberry, did we mention that one? Trailing blackberry, thimbleberry, count Himalayan?
Sure, we should count it for this.
Okay.
The Himalayan blackberry that we all know and
it's tasty,
tolerate.
But
there's red huckleberries up there, the green huckleberries.
I didn't eat any evergreen huckleberries right now.
They ripen a little bit later.
Yep.
So.
And salmonberry pretty much over now.
Yeah.
And actually the trailing blackberry are kind of trailing off.
Yeah.
But the thimbleberry, they're pretty good right now.
Mm.
So what would you say is, I don't want to say special about this place, but what is it that makes you excited about this place? Because I'm seeing some of that excitement.
I guess I'll say knowing that if we can achieve this and we can, as a community, acquire this property, the broader property, to make a 918-acre community forest, if we can do the fundraising we need to do and achieve that and actually launch the operations of a community forest in the next year or two, knowing that this place will always be a forest, an intact forest, and managed for economic benefits, ecological benefits, and social benefits for the community, it is what makes this special to me. I mean, being in a forest and knowing that about it, that it's not going to be converted and developed into many other things. It's going to sustain its forest function over time, and it's going to be maintained in a way that's benefiting the community, and it's going to be maintained by the community to take care of the forest, so the forest is taken care of and resilient over time as things change and things get warmer. So I think that's what's exciting to me, is that it's a place that is going to be under intentional care and be loved by many generations to come.
So we'll still have that different dawn chorus and the preponderance of native bird species and the mixed forest and the variety of berries. So Jen, what about you?
Gosh, I don't know. I will be honest, I did not know how much I would fall for Chimicum Ridge, and I feel like I've totally fallen hard for Chimicum Ridge. I didn't know that it would be so important and special to me.
So that the actual part of just being and living here has changed that in you?
Yeah, or? I think so. Yeah. Pretty much because it feels like I am in relation to the ridge.
I think that's amazingly important. That you have a relationship now with it.
And so just in that I have a relationship, it's a special place to me. I have that song, and one of the lines in the song is, not spectacular, but perfect. And I love that because, you know, a lot of times when we think of the wild spaces, we think of the most spectacular wild places. And these wild spaces are just as important for all of us, for all of those benefits that Eric mentioned, recreational, agricultural even, and the social and recreational benefits.
Well, we'll come back to your song in a little bit, but just to let the listeners know, as you might have guessed, Jen has written a song, and we're going to hear it at the end of this program. So thinking about now in perpetuity, how is that going to happen? The intention is in perpetuity, and we can kind of get a sense of what that might mean. But what's the vision for getting there?
Yeah, sure. As a land trust, a nonprofit conservation organization working locally, the land trust has been doing a lot of work in Jefferson County since 1989 to help permanently protect properties. And we do that in a number of different ways. Sometimes the land trust acquires property and owns it. And sometimes we actually work with private landowners to establish permanent conditions on the property, permanent restrictions on the property, through these voluntary agreements that are called conservation easements. And then those are essentially real estate interests that last in perpetuity, and the land trust ensures are honored over time. And with this property, there's a combination of things going on. There's different easements that are permanently protecting some of the features of the property, like the forest ecology function of the property and the protection from it to being converted and developed. There's different funding associated with some of those real estate interests that have helped permanently protect it as well. And with the community forest endeavor, if we're able to accomplish this, we'll have several different pots of money that we'll have used as a community to permanently establish this place, which just have different kind of legal restrictions on them. They have legal restrictions, but we also would have a moral kind of imperative to hold and maintain this property in perpetuity over time. So what that means is that as time goes on, as the land trust continues to manage this place with the community involvement, there's going to be generations of people involved in that effort. And the one thing that stays the same is the permanent protection of the place. And some of the written in stone conditions of those protections are that the forest has to sustain some of those important features that help it function as a forest. So it has to maintain a diversity of species. It can't just be all one species. And it has to have a diversity of structure. It has to be some big trees, some little trees, some small trees. It has to have lots of wood on the ground. It can't just be stripped clean of all the wood on the ground. It has to have standing dead trees as well. All of those features help maintain a certain kind of function in the forest that all this different wildlife, from the plants to the animals to the insects, they all rely on that kind of function. And that's written in stone. And how we achieve that as a community on a day-to-day operational level, that'll probably change over time as a community changes or as needs change and as the climate changes. I mean, this forest is going to be under a lot of stress. Some of these species are already starting to show a lot of stress. So there's going to be some changes in that too. And there needs to be flexibility built into the system to allow for this place to continue to function in its natural way, but also still produce all those benefits we're looking for.
So you mentioned changes that you can already see that are a response to climate change. Can you share a couple of those?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's no secret to anybody out there that there's major changes happening across the planet, and the predictions for this area are simply to expect this place to get hotter and drier in the summers and warmer and wetter in the winters. That's a really quick and easy way to kind of summarize what we can expect in this particular pocket of the world.
So today, as you look around the forest here, I understand that some of the trees species are experiencing stress. Which ones?
Yeah, so across the Northwest, and we see it here, we see it a lot of different places where in the Stewardship Program, we're monitoring a lot of properties that we've helped protect over the years. We're seeing red cedars starting to show a lot of signs of stress.
And you see that if you're looking around pretty easily.
Yeah, and so looking at that through a scientific lens, there's a lot of people looking at that and trying to understand exactly what's going on. And it seems as if, and I don't have any conclusive evidence or anything of what exactly is creating those stresses, but it seems as if it's started primarily in 2015. There was kind of a warmer, wetter winter and a hotter, drier summer that was really...
Which is clearly going to put different kinds of stresses on
kind of emblematic of what we could expect more like 2040, that 2015 year. And so when scientists are looking at that, and then soon after that, we started seeing a decline in red cedar, I guess health and vigor in certain areas. It's hard to say exactly what's going on. I don't want to say that anybody actually knows all the particulars of forest ecology out there in the world. There's a lot of mystery in all of this.
But it's nice to kind of hold the thought that with intention, this area could keep a lot of its ecological features and functions.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. The prescription really for the community forest that we've designed, both through the conservation easement on the community forest property, through the types of forest management that we've already started implementing on Valley View, is to help increase the amount of resilience the forest will have as these climate influence events start to happen more and more, those heat events or high energy storm events. When there's a big disturbance in these forests, the forest is a system of disturbance. It's used to disturbance, but disturbance after disturbance after disturbance in large scales, that can start to really set things back. And there are places all over the West where these disturbances have happened, like big fires. Forests are not regenerating. And so in a place like this, if we can manage kind of ahead of time to get the forest ready for what's coming, then we will have that much better chance to have a healthy, vigorous forest that can produce all those benefits we're looking for.
So that's a subject we're clearly going to come back to in future programs and future community conversations.
Getting ready.
Getting ready. And we will come back to that. But since we're nearing the end of our time, Jen, I would love to hear your song.
All right, great.
Yeah, thanks, Nan. This has been fun.
Okay.
I don't know to describe it or explain what it does for me. Let me take you on a circuit and show you what I see. The ridge rises from the valley, sun breaks through the trees, blooming salmon berry, cedars in the breeze. Let me take you to the ridge. I never read Buckminster Fuller, but I live here in a dome. Some say there's nothing purer than the forest I call home. The ridge rises from the valley, sun breaks through the trees, blooming salmon berry, cedars in the breeze. Let me take you to the ridge. Not spectacular, but perfect. Under glaciers it was warm. Then the timber barrens crept in. Lord, here I was born. The ridge rises from the valley, sun breaks through the trees, blooming salmon berry, cedars in the breeze. Let me take you to the ridge. Big leaf maple, soft and mossy, we avoid the nettle's sting. Watching wheat grow in the valley, red currants in the spring. The ridge rises from the valley, sun breaks through the trees, blooming salmon berry. trees, blooming salmon berry, cedars in the breeze. Let me take you to the river. Let me take you to the river. Let me take.
Well, with that, I want to thank everybody for listening. We hope you've enjoyed our program of authentic, eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live, this earth. Today's sound engineer and editor is Nora Petrich, and you can listen to Nature Now podcasts, this one as well as past ones, on the KPTZ website.